Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
The schedule is out. Ravens are wearing jerseys, OTAs, news, contracts, this and more this week on Pod Like a Raven. Feels like it has been a while since we have been speaking with you. I think it's only been 3 weeks, but for some reason it feels like longer than that. I am Antonio Barbera, excited to talk tangible things that are happening in the NFL, that are happening in the world of the Ravens, and to bring this news and some analysis are my coworkers, and I'm gonna bring them in here as we hit summer. Jace Evans, Jace. Coming right into the end of May, turning into June. Maybe it's the best time of the year for some of us. I'm a big fan of when we start turning into summertime and things slow down and the days are long. And how's it going?
It's going good, Antonio. I'm with you. The weather's been delightful when it's not raining here. not too hot yet. And as it pertains to the Ravens, you know, it's just such an exciting time of year because I think you mentioned OTAs are in session. We have the schedule. And so for me, it all feels real now. Like, we have the schedule. We know the exact order of games the Ravens are going to play this fall. We all knew the opponents, but now we know how it's going to play out, at least chronologically, that is. And it feels real. The players have been drafted, the schedule set, and really all we have to do is, like, look ahead to training camp, which is very soon. It's a month and a half from now, basically. Then that's really the countdown to the football season. So I think that's the most important thing. While summer's great, football season is a mere 2.5-3 months away. And that's what's most important and exciting, in my opinion.
And Tim Horsey. Tim, how you doing?
I'm good, my friend. I'm doing very well. I'm with Jace. Jace and I are big sweat boys, I think. So summer isn't always our favorite season, and I need to get to the football. It's weird. We'll talk about it a bit later in the show. I'm kind of over the theatrics of the schedule release, and I've gone full old man. Like, just give me – I love Stavi, but just give me the PDF and let me look at it. And I think because of that, maybe I haven't dove into it as much as I usually do, but I'm excited to talk about it with you guys here. And, you know, look, right before this, I was on my phone, and you saw the Instagram post of Derrick Henry in purple and black officially running just drills with no pads. And it's safe to say I'm getting even more excited for football season just seeing that.
Right. So let's start with that image and where it came from, because there's a few pieces of news that we can just kind of get over with. And one is OTAs are happening. Great. They basically just film social media clips of them doing some drills. They work out together. They sort out whatever rehabs they're doing. Not a lot happening at OTAs. That's okay. But it is fun to see the players back on the field. The first image of Derrick Henry, I promise that this isn't just hyperbole, but when I saw the video of him walking onto the field, my brain, the first thing that it said to me was, oh wow, he's wearing like really light pads. It's weird that he's like half wearing pads. And I realized it and I was like, no, you idiot. He's not wearing any pads. He's just, that's just how big he is. And the jersey looked like it because of how it's designed to have pads fit in it. But no, that was just Derrick Henry in a jersey walking around. And that's the first thing I want to talk about. Just hottest take right off the stove. Have we forgotten that Derrick Henry is a Raven? Have we kind of analytic-brained this too much where when he signed, we just wanted to pump the brakes because, oh, you know, like late 20s. I think he's 29. Is he even 30?
I think he might have just turned 30, like, earlier this year.
So we just did the, like, oh, past his prime Derrick Henry, let's settle down. He's going to slow down this year because that's what hasn't happened yet. He's a very, very, very good player that is just on the Ravens now as the lead back. Seems like an upgrade at the position, and I am, like, just now excited about having Derrick Henry significantly more, I think, than when he actually signed. And I don't know if I'm, like, my brain is tricking myself because I saw him in the jersey, or what is it, or it's almost like time passing has been helpful to remember. Guess what? He still may be very, very, very good on this Ravens team.
And I think a big part of it, Antonio, is that there's so much focus on what the Ravens lost in free agency, this free agency cycle. And what we still don't know, we still aren't sure who, like, the starting guards are or the starting right tackle. Hopefully that's, you know, some of the things that start to get ironed out at these OTAs. But I do think it's an important point to be like, oh yeah, they signed the guy who has been, like, by far the best running back in the NFL for the past 5 seasons, just plays for the team now. And when lined up next to Lamar Jackson, assuming he has any health at all, and I did look it up, he turned 30 just in January, still should have you know, some tread on the tires. And I think, in theory, should help with, I think, things we were complaining about in January when they clearly didn't trust any of the running backs they had left standing. You should not have that problem with Derrick Henry. I do think it's an exciting thing, but I'm with you. It's not something that's been even top of mind for me because I think we just got, you know, in so much in draft mode and even other just more free agency departures and trades and all the other stuff that went on with the Ravens in the offseason. It is easy, I think, to lose sight of. They brought in a huge piece of this attack that, you know, could very well be the focal point of the entire offense, even, like, Lamar Jackson aside. So, yeah, I think it's exciting. It's exciting to see him wearing 22, and I'm excited to see him running a football, and we'll see it probably not until week one against the Chiefs. I'm guessing we will not see him in a regular season or a preseason game. So we are not going to see him, I would guess, actually on the field until the season opener, but I am very much looking forward to that point in time.
Yeah, I think Antonio put it best of, you know, our analytic brain, smart brain. We, you know, we consume football at such a nerdy level, the three of us, that it's like, man, okay, the narrative is about how much the Ravens have lost and they're only signing as a running back who are, you know, categorically overvalued. People are basically undervaluing them at this point because the market has gotten so, like, ridiculously low for running backs. And then you just use your, you know, dumb football brain. You're like, Derrick Henry, Raven, run over people with Pat Ricard. And, like, just take out all the other nonsense words you don't need, like the thes, and out all those words you don't need to describe it. Derrick Henry, big, fast, strong, run over people now. Like, I'm ready for that. I'm ready for that in purple and black. And I don't know if it's as much of we've kind of forgotten about it, is that this is just kind of the dead period. They got the business done early, and now we kind of, you know, you don't think about it. You kind of put it in the back of your brain until week one, like Jace said. You know, I'm very much looking forward to him and his nose ring sitting on the sidelines for all the preseason games. I don't want to see him suit up one time until week one because we need those legs fresh for the stretch run of the season. But yeah, I guess maybe we're underrating it a little bit, but maybe we should all just take, you know, maybe once a week, maybe twice a week, however much you need. Just type in Derrick Henry Alabama or Derrick Henry Heisman season or Derrick, like, maybe Titans plays, but watching Titans plays doesn't, you know, tickle me as much, family show. Maybe just get a highlight tape going and you got a couple that once a week, twice a week, you just watch those to remind yourself of, yeah, what we have here.
Another small note to go over, and it's one of those things where it's not you don't really notice it unless it's a small disaster waiting to happen, and it's that the Ravens signed every player that they drafted. That's done with. There were no issues with all of their draft picks signing. It's become less of an issue with the contracts kind of being standardized now for rookies based on their the spot and what round they're in, but still very nice to see that within, I want to say, weeks of the draft, they were all signed, ready to go, and obviously will be as present as their health allows at OTAs and into the summer. So great, check the box, move on from that, and excited to see those players produce. And then the last thing I wanted to go over in terms of before we get to the Ravens schedule is this is, I mean, it's old in terms of news, but we haven't really had a chance to kind of dive in on the show. And that is the two Ravens, I say the two fifth year options, but that's not exactly what it was. It was one fifth year option, and then it was whatever was going on with Rashad Bateman. And we touched on the Bateman stuff briefly kind of in between draft talk, and I don't believe we even got into the Owe news, but I want to talk about them on the show a little bit in kind of just reviewing the ceiling and the floor for these players for based on the deals, the Eric DaCosta-ing of it all, which just is a good opportunity to talk about how he works and the types of decisions that you have to make kind of along the margins to keep a very successful team moving forward when you have to pay your quarterback a lot of money. So I want to get into the money of it first. We'll start with Bateman. He basically signs a two-year extension. Not eligible for that fifth-year option because of the whatever it was, the no-show of the season before. So they kind of rework his deal. He plays the final year of the, I guess, the rookie deal in 2024, which is this upcoming season, and then there's two more years for him. And it ends up being 3 years of Rashad Bateman for about $5 million when you average everything out for those 3 years. I am not a fan of... I'm not the biggest fan of Rashad Bateman, let's say that. I'm not. It's not that I, you know, he's made some plays... I have had some issues with him. The team loves him, and the coach, Harbaugh, and the front office, and the kind of the positional coaches and the coordinators and all that have given him so much praise, and that it's he's doing as much as he can, right? He's running the routes, he's getting open, he's doing all the things, just wasn't really connecting very much with Jackson, was kind of pushed out a little bit by Beckham being there this past season. Beckham's gone. Bateman kind of has some space now to, in theory, fill all these expectations and all this great stuff that he was doing on film. And if you have a first-round draft pick wide receiver that kind of puts all this stuff together, $5 million a season for 3 years is going to look like a, more than a steal. I know he hasn't done it yet. But when you have to, as the GM, kind of... like, take the information you have, take what you've seen, and then move forward. It kind of seems like a really good position for the team. It seems like a good position for the player. He probably did not have a bunch of offers and a bunch of kind of other teams sniffing around for multi-year extensions based on what we've seen. But, you know, I guess I just wanted to get your guys' take on how that ended up kind of working itself out. There were some comments made where if he has a super successful 2024, the team said to him that they'll immediately go back and look at the deal and rework. I'm going to wait and see if that actually ends up happening or not. But as it stands now, seems like a very savvy situation specifically for the team. For the player, great. He gets some stability in terms of you know, adding years to his contract. But it just feels like the ceiling on this is immense, based on the cost for that player.
Yeah, it's so hard because I'm with you. He frustrates me a lot. I mean, you look at his stats. This was actually the first season he was pretty much healthy, 16 games. And yet, because of some of the factors you talked about, 32 catches, 367 yards, and only one touchdown. So, you know, I'd love to see more than that. But to your other point, we have seen like the talents there, and I feel like I've talked about this a bunch, I feel like, but I feel like those first few weeks of the 2022 season, it seemed like he was becoming a real guy. He took that slant to the house against the Dolphins. He had the nice, beautiful deep ball catch against the Jets in week one, and it felt like, wow, we finally done it. And then he got hurt and disappeared, and then they signed a bunch of guys and drafted Zay Flowers, and then he found himself basically like their third or fourth receiver last year. So I think the more I sit on this, the more I actually do like it for the Ravens, but just because there is still some upside, even if I do find him frustrating, you're not paying him a lot, certainly less than Owe, who we'll get into in a minute, at least for next season. And so for that price, you know, I can't really argue. I did have to laugh in their press release announcing that they extended him, or like their news write-up, quote unquote, on the Ravens website. They threw this thing from PFF in about how he had one of the best separation grades from Pro Football Focus, like in the league. But they posted like a chart from it, and you know, I'm not the greatest at reading charts, but it basically suggests no one got more separation and was less productive than Rashad Bateman. So take that what you will. I don't know what that means. I don't know if that's something they could rectify, if it's as simple as like just him and Lamar getting on the same page more. And maybe you're forced to do that with now just like he's the number two guy. I guess that's the concern sort of entering this season, unless you view Nelson Aguilar ahead of him. He's going to have more opportunities this year. And so I think from that perspective, I think that's something you have to at least think is okay with this deal. So yeah, the more I sit on it, the more I get why it happened. I just want it to come all together finally, because I see the vision. It just has not happened yet.
Yeah. I don't want to tread too much on what you guys have said. I think this is a no lose situation for the Ravens, with the amount of money they're paying him. Now, I think the one way they do lose it is if they put all their chips in him being the absolute number two wide receiver basket, and it's more of the same, whether it's an injury riddled season or last year where he played the whole year and still only finished with like 32 receptions, I think. And it's not like they were being taken away from Odell Beckham Jr., who, like, you know, was definitely more of a locker room presence, I think, than an on-field guy. It wasn't because of Zay Flowers being like a dominant force. Zay was great, but he wasn't like this all-time superstar type of wide receiver. It just, he wasn't really on the same page as Lamar Jackson at sometimes, it felt like, and then, you know, calling out Eric DaCosta and then since deleted social media posts. It's just like, it has always felt like the diva has come before the production. And like, I'm fine with a wide receiver being a diva, but you got to prove it on the field. Like, you got to be Chad Ochocinco and then change your name to Ochocinco after you've already done all the Ochocinco stuff. You know, not doing it like in your second year in the league and then, you know, doing nothing. But, you know, I think you guys are right. I think the talent is there, as long as he can stay healthy and actually shows up. And again, just doing quick math here. If you're talking about weapons outside of Lamar Jackson on this Ravens offense, in no particular order, above, Rashad Bateman, I would put Derrick Henry, I would put Mark Andrews, I would put Isaiah Likely, I would put Zay Flowers. So he's fifth on the depth chart in terms of just pure weapon, and maybe even lower if some guys step up or you know, other guys, no, you know, Nelson Aguilar takes a step. Not going to take a step, don't worry, guys. You know, at best right now, currently, he's the fifth option. And I think he's kind of getting paid like it. And I think that's fine for what the Ravens need right now. I will say, I don't know if you guys mentioned this already, or I can almost guarantee Jace mentioned it in our text group, soon to be available on Patreon. So I hope, if you said it, apologies. But if not, it needs to be emphasized. Bateman is now the first Ravens first round wide receiver to sign a second contract with the Ravens. He's the first round wide receiver to sign a second contract with the Ravens, which is just, it's just abysmal. But hey, we did it, guys. We did it with Rashad Bateman. Who knew? That's the trivia question. It's going to be him. At some point down the line. Which is,
I think, yeah, this franchise turns 30 next year. It's their 30th season next year. He's the first one.
Just, I believe Travis Taylor was a first-round pick. He, like, was. How did he not get a second? Mark Clayton. How did Mark Clayton not get a small second contract with the team? Yeah, it's just... it's strange. But I do like... Rashad Siete kind of seems like that's what, like, a very good potential name when he has 1,000 receiving yards this season and just explodes and then immediately complains that he's not making nearly enough money. The other player, oh my gosh, Odafe Owe. It's very funny that these two players were drafted so close together, because in a way they're the same player. Talent, potential, question marks, frustration, and second contracts. Well, I guess, you know, kind of a second contract for Owe. For his, it is the fifth year option being picked up. We have spoken about this player a lot. Another similarity to Bateman, a lot of the kind of secondary stats, people love him. He jumps off the page with his, like, win rate at the line and all that stuff. The three of us have complained that we have never seen an athletic dude close worse in our lives. We saw Jacoby Brissett, one of the slowest quarterbacks in the league, turn the corner on him. And this was a dude who's like a 4.4 speed guy at the like, none of it makes any sense. His sack numbers, 5 as a rookie, 3 in his second year, 5 as a third-year player. Has not been a starter, really. He has started 13 of the 45 games that he has played in. This is a first-round draft pick, edge rusher. Saw his snaps go down last season when the veteran additions that the Ravens made were just very productive in the system that they had going, and he still wasn't kind of really able to take a leap. None of us expect him to take a leap in year 4, and specifically in year 5, when the money goes up from what he was making before. The fifth year is going to be $13.2 million. But I stop again, and I say, was this kind of the right move anyway? How expensive and how available are better and more productive young pass rushers? Like, where else are these players going to come from outside of you drafting and developing them, or taking flyers on these veterans that they've been able to do and had some success with last year? They're so thin at the position. They have so many question marks at the position. It kind of feels like you had to do this, and yet I don't really like it. I kind of am stuck in no man's land here where... Yes, we have 2 more years of this player, but that second year is going to be odd based on if he just continues as a 5 sacks per year player, making $13 million even for 1 year, it's not going to look so great. So I'm very torn on this move for the Ravens, even more so than the Bateman one.
I was kind of surprised it happened. I don't know about you, Tim. I think going into this, I don't know what I thought. I just thought, like, for his level of production, that just seemed like so steep, and it just seemed like they didn't do it with Patrick Queen. Like, they made that decision I think even before signing or bringing in Roquan Smith, I think, right? Based on the timelines, or maybe not.
I don't think so. No.
It came after,
because probably. It would have been in the beginning of last season, and Roquan was right there.
Okay, so that makes more sense why he didn't. But, like, yeah. I feel like I've seen more from Patrick Queen in those, you know, first 3 seasons than we saw certainly from Owe. And I, like, get... I see what you're saying, because I get it with Owe. You look at him, and it looks great. He looks like exactly what you want up there on the line. But he's just so invisible to me. I've never seen a guy so, like... physically imposing, and I know, like you said, I know what the pressure rates say, but just watching a game, it never seems like he's like the guy making things happen. It's Justin Matabike up front. It was Jadeveon Clowney last season. And then sometimes it's like, oh, and there's Owe on the tackle after the pocket got blown up entirely by someone else. And
yeah, that's a, Jace, that's such a good small point. And this is just like a, it's like a vibes thing, which is probably wrong to think, but it feels like we could go through those sacks and two or three of the five that he had all season are like second guy making the play, where like it's just kind of cleaning up a quarterback who's already going to the ground. And that's not good enough. That's not good enough.
Yeah, not for $13.25 million. You definitely need guys like that. Like, you definitely need guys who just stay on the field, stay healthy, and can make those plays. There is value in that. But just like, I think what hurts is that he's like, kind of like you mentioned, he's sort of at this point, unless you think Ojabo is going to stay healthy and become something. And I think he's looked better, or at least explosive, in some of his very limited minutes than I think we've seen from Owe. But it just, like, it is hard for me to just envision the leap happening after three seasons. And maybe it does, but I get them not wanting to give up on him because he is got the prototypical size. He does some things well. He is, like, I would say he's out there a lot, but, you know, not, like we were just kind of talking about, he doesn't seem like the driver of anything, really. He kind of just seems like a guy who's there. And so that's why I guess I'm kind of surprised in the end they made it happen. But again, you don't want to, I guess, see a guy walk. The Ravens hate giving up on first round picks and picks in general, really. But especially a guy who does contribute, but just maybe not to the level you think. So I don't know. I'm curious, Tim, what you thought of the whole picking up that fifth year.
I don't know. And I think a lot of it is because, like we can make fun is the wrong word, but we can like disparage the underlying metrics all we want, because yeah, they are super annoying when you look at a guy that's like, just get right there. It was the Matt Judon thing, right, with us for years when this podcast first started, of like, I don't care about win rate, I don't care about hurries, I want the guy on the ground. But a lot of that, again, is stupid NFL brain, which again, you have to walk a fine balance. Derrick Henry, Adafeowe. Derrick Henry, Adafeowe. I think it's a shrewd move for a couple of reasons. And I will start with the cynical reason. The Ravens don't have a ton at outside pass rusher. You know, they have the young guys like Robinson out of Ole Miss and Adisa Isaac, who they just drafted out of Penn State as well. They have Ojabo, who can't stay on the field. They have Kyle Van Noy, who is, you know, veteran as veteran gets. And they have Adafeowe. And if you believe in these underlying metrics with Owe, and you look at him and you're like, he can, the next step is coming. I mean, Justin Matabike, that was year four, right? I think that was year four, because yeah, he got paid right after. It was a contract year. So that was year four for him. This is year four for Adafeowe. I understand different positions, obviously, but if you're betting on the breakout, and if it's the same set of eyes that we're looking at Matabike, that see Owe. Now, again, you know, my set of eyes saw Justin Matabike and liked what I saw, so maybe it wasn't that hard to see. If these same set of eyes from the Ravens see this with Matabike, and then they see this with Owe, and they say the breakout is coming, the deal that you're going to get a premier pass rusher on in the fifth-year option is a steal. It just is, objectively, it is a steal, the money that they will get him on if he breaks out. But is he going to break out? I don't know. I just don't know. I think for me, the main reason that I'm kind of fine with it is that if we're, you know, we're not this coming season, but the next season in, I still kind of want Adafeowe in the building for the things he does. And also know that maybe, you know, you kind of find out after this year, hey, we get Adafe for one more year. He can be a nice run stuffing guy. He can make a little some plays, but we got to get pass rusher. And then you bring in said pass rusher if it's in the draft, and you have a year basically behind the likes of Owe and Ojabo and Robinson, who will be in year three at that point, and Isaac, who will be coming off his rookie year. At worst, it gives you more time to transition into that, to find another guy. And I think just purely because of the depth of that outside linebacker position and how important it is, I'm kind of okay with them picking up the option and saying, look, if he breaks out, it's a steal for a premier pass rusher. If he doesn't, we're paying a little bit too much for a premium run defender, but like, it is what it is when we lose the likes, you know, like a Jadeveon Clowney who broke out. That being said, I will just, you Google Odafe Owe, and obviously Google's got the weird broken AI assistant now, and then they've got like all the articles, you scroll down a little bit, and they got videos. And the first two videos are both from 3 weeks ago from YouTube, and they say, the first one, quote, highlights, Odafe Owe is just getting started. The second one, quote, why the Odafe Owe fifth-year option is a good move. You'll never guess, both of those videos come from BaltimoreRavens.com. BaltimoreRavens.com is the one pumping those out. Continuing to act like journalists and just work for the team. You gotta love what those guys do. Shout out Ryan Mink and Garrett Downing. Just we're on the pulse of the Ravens, but we're never gonna say a bad thing about the Ravens. It gave me a good chuckle. But yeah, overall, you know, look, for what the Ravens have, I think it's a fine move that is a little bit more risky than the Bateman signing, but not as risky as I think we make it out to be.
The 5-minute video, or however long those videos are, of that thing that we did, here is why we were right to do that thing that we just decided to do. It seems like insanity when you look at it for a few steps away, but every team does it. Every franchise, sports franchise does it, really, the pro sports teams. Tim, I think you made the best point for OA is the time aspect of it. I think that is exactly it. It gives the team a year, an extra year, to let that next generation of pass rushers, one of them, there's three or four of them, one of them to step up and become like the guy, basically the dude who becomes the next starter there. And with that, I think it's, yeah, kind of a move you had to make, and it's a 1 year, not mistake, but it's a 1 year risk, and then you move on from it after that. Okay, enough of that. I appreciate the listeners hanging out for like the minutes on the couch as we went over the two Raven decisions there.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Let's get to the schedule, guys. We are going to go through, I'm going to say month by month. We'll do it in four game increments here for the most part. I'll list them off and then get your guys kind of take on that month. We can do some bigger picture stuff as well, maybe at the end. We have some fun stats to throw at you guys. But let's start with the first month. And most importantly, that first game, because it is the NFL opener at Kansas City, Thursday, September 5th. Then they'll have, 9-10 days for their next game, the home opener, your classic 1 p.m.er against the Las Vegas Raiders. The following Sunday at Dallas, And then the Sunday after that, September 29th, home against Buffalo, Sunday night. So two primetime games in that first month. But really the thing for me is this stupid Chiefs game, it being the week one opener, is just not going to let me forget about the playoff loss. It's not going to let me bury the playoff loss further and further into my memory. I'm just going to think about it all summer because I'm just going to keep seeing week one at Chiefs. The media is going to talk about that game all the time as we get closer to the NFL season. And then during the game, they are going to reference that playoff game over and over again. And there's going to be highlights and the PTSD is going to hit and it's going to be like Danny DeVito and It's Always Sunny when they have that episode with the therapist and he just, yo, you cut me open. That'll be me. That'll be all of us, I think, that Thursday night. And it's not fun. If they had just put that game, like, week seven, then I'd be, you know, we'll deal with it when we deal with it. And we'd have six games of new Raven season to think about. But no. It is what we have to continue to digest for the next 4 months, 3 months, until we get to week one. And I hate it. But anyway, first month of the season, guys. It's obviously a tough one, but what do you like, dislike? What gets your attention here with these first four games?
I don't know if I'm going to zag here from what you said. I kind of like the Chiefs game being first. Just get it out of the way. Because, you know, here's the thing. You're going to have to play them at some point, and why not play them in week one when the stakes for the 2024 season are at their absolute lowest? You should beat the Raiders the next week. So you're either, you know, you either go into Kansas, and, you know, again, caveat, no games given in the NFL. But you go into Kansas City and say you get your doors beaten off. You say, well, that stunk, but now it's over with. We don't have to play them again until probably the playoffs. And then you play the Raiders the next week, and you're 1-1, and you're off and running. But if you win, what a great start to the season. And I'm not putting it past the Ravens to win this game. The Chiefs lost this game last season. They lost to the Lions in the season opener. They've lost this game before because they win the Super Bowl a lot. So they've been in it a bunch. But I mean, yes, do avoid the pregame of this. There's going to be a banner raising. As you mentioned, the highlights of the Legarius Sneed strip will be involved. I don't want to see that of Zay Flowers. It's going to suck. But I think just on the whole, I've come around to it just getting it out of the way. And I think part of me had just accepted that this was because, like, looking at the Chiefs' opponents, it was either going to be us or the Bengals or maybe, like, Jim Harbaugh's Chargers debut. That seemed to be, like, the most logical opponents the Chiefs could have faced. And so when I started looking at who, like, was available for that, I was just like, they're going to make us play this game. And it sucks, but it is what it is. So, yeah, I've come down on I think it's good to just get it out of the way. But like you said, I mean, it's a tough start to the season because, like, that game will be hard. And I don't know what to expect from the Cowboys, but it's at Dallas. It's a 4:25 Eastern start. So you're going to be in that Fox game of the week. It's not a standalone game, but it probably might as well be because there's probably only two or three other games on during that time. And then you're the Bills on Sunday Night Football. And I don't know what to expect from the Bills. They blew this game very badly the last time they played the Bills. They had like a 14-point lead in the first half and saw that disappear. So I don't know what to... And that was several years ago, too. So I don't know what to expect from the start. I think the Ravens will find a way to get off to a 2-2 start, maybe even a 3-1. But I'm not going to say it's out of the realm of possibility. They get off to a 1-3 start and the sky is falling in Baltimore. I think it's definitely, I mean, if they drop that Bills game on a Sunday night to go 1-3, Sunday Night Football, that is what's leading all the nationwide shows the very next Monday. And I suggest you all to not watch Get Up that day or whatever. Just avoid
it. Another reason to not watch Get Up that day. Jace, the Chiefs play the Niners too this year. I know it's in San Francisco, but have they ever done, I'm trying to remember, has the NFL ever done the, like, run it back week one game for the opponents?
Oh, that's a great question. Did they? I feel like they have before. Or there was talk of it.
That would kind of be amazing if it was just week one, Kansas City, San Francisco again.
Yeah, in San Francisco. I mean, they've done that before because the Ravens had to do that. We know the NFL's not above having the Super Bowl champ play on the road because it's happened.
I think it happened one time, and it was Peter Angelo's fault, not our fault.
But, yeah, so that would be fun. But, yeah, I get why they're doing it. It's an AFC title game rematch. You could do the Bengals, maybe, but it's the most recent AFC title game, so... They're going to give it to you. That's going to be what it is. And it's, yeah, the first of our many primetime games this year. Look, I don't love it, but I think on the whole, I'd rather just get it out of the way first thing on that Thursday. Then we could just watch. And if they win, it's even better. We just watch the first Sunday of the year, just carefree, want to know. That would be great. I don't think that'll happen, but what a world that would be.
You make a couple of points there quickly that I just want to touch on. One, I completely, at first I was like, you got to be effing kidding me. And now I'm just like, yeah, week one, whatever. Get it out of the way. Just move on. Maybe the Chiefs haven't figured out everything yet because they like to kind of like, you know, oh, start slow and now we're going to come back and people doubted us and all that BS. I almost cussed there. So get it out of the way. As somebody who hates pregame shows anyway, I will be tuning in at 8:20 as soon, like, not even for the coin toss. I will be there when Justin Tucker is kicking the ball off of his foot is when I will turn my screen on. But, Jace, I'm a little bit different from you on the first football Sunday. Because the first football Sunday, I like my team being there, preferably at 1 o'clock. And having people over, making some food, watching the Ravens and putting all the other crap on the other screens and then just sitting there until, you know, 11:30 on my couch watching football and having the Ravens as a part of that. And when it's not the Ravens, it feels a little off to just kind of like, it's like the bye week, you're like, oh, this is relaxing. I can just watch football and enjoy football. But the first Sunday when you're like, deleting the account from your FanDuel, like just deleting money, making all the bets you want because it's the first weekend. I want the Ravens as a part of that, and they're not going to be, obviously, because God hates us. I think that the start of the schedule is kind of the big talking point here. I know Jace has a really good point about the end of the schedule that we'll get to a bit later in the show here, but man, you got to start off hot because you bring up, Jace said, oh, if you go 1-3, at Sunday Night Football, week 4, September 29th against Buffalo. I'll just spoil week 5. Must win at Cincinnati is what that would be. Cincinnati team who is hell-bent on rebounding after kind of an injury-riddled season last year, a disappointing season for them overall. So, I mean, look, the last time we played Vegas, we lost to Vegas. We were all in Vegas for that. Not saying this is a little bit different, obviously, but, you know, there's lingering things there, it being a home game. You would expect them to beat that team by about 45. That's kind of what I'm hoping in that week 2 matchup. Dallas, and we talked about this off air before we started. Dallas doesn't scare me purely because we beat the piss out of Dallas every time we play them. I could just still see LaRon McClain going 80 yards in the old Jerry world. That memory is burned into my brain. So, and obviously they're a very good team, but it's kind of like they've got a lot of weird stuff going on too with not signing Dak and like, just all these contracts up in the air, what have you. And Buffalo, I still think, is going to be good. But Buffalo has, obviously, there's rumors of their demise, which I think are greatly over-exaggerated. But, yeah, for sure, this is a looping in that Week 5 game, which I know we'll talk about a little bit here, that at Cincinnati. This is an incredibly tough start to the season. And, you know, the Ravens have ended pretty well when Lamar Jackson is healthy and actually playing in December. Let's hope that they can kind of get off to a hot start here because they're going to need it.
Yeah, the discussing it through the Cincinnati game is a good point because the following weeks there is a nice little soft underbelly in the middle of this season, and that is from weeks like six to ten. This is in October 13th. So after that Cincinnati game, the following Sunday, the 13th, is home against Washington. We might have to, Jace, bring on one of the Washington fellas for that week just to kind of have some fun discussions on air leading up to that game. But home against Washington, the following Monday, on the road at Tampa Bay, then on the road the following Sunday at Cleveland, home the next Sunday at Denver. and I'll stop there. That gets us to November 3rd. You know, not the easiest, still not the easiest slate, but you certainly feel good going up against Washington, against Denver. I don't think any of us are that scared of Tampa Bay, Baker Mayfield doing stuff, even though it's on the road. And then Cleveland, I have no idea what they're going to be doing at that point in time. I don't know who the quarterback will be at that point in time. But you still have to feel relatively good about the kind of the middle-ish portion, the second month of the season there.
Yeah, this strikes me as like their easiest run. And all those games pretty much you mentioned are 1 p.m., except the Bucs game. That's a Monday Night Football game. That might be their most random of their primetime games this season. That kind of just strikes me as they're like, oh, Tampa won the NFC South. They should get a Monday Night Football game. And who do they play? The Ravens are good. I guess we'll make this a game. Like, it's a very strange kind of Monday Night game. But and I hate Monday Night games kind of as a general rule, even though I like Joe Buck and Troy Aikman. I there's just something about, like, the fact you play the last game of the week and then you're on a short week. I just don't love it. But I agree with you. This is the stretch. Like, if they lose to Washington, that's a disaster. and Denver should be, like, the biggest, like, the most... This is probably going to be the heavy... Like, they might be more heavily favored in that game, depending on what Denver does, than perhaps any other game this entire season. So, like, those are games you should win. I agree with you. I don't know what to make of Cleveland. And I guess it's just a general point, something I was thinking about with the schedule that's kind of interesting, is just their division games in the AFC North in general. You know, this was a division where every team had a winning record last season. The Bengals were fourth place at 9-8. The other two teams, Steelers and Bengals, both made the playoffs. And the Ravens, you know, they went 13-4, but they went 3-3 in the division. So, you know, it's certainly not going to be easy in any of these games. And so I'd still probably consider most of them a toss up, especially if Burrow's healthy. They've kind of strangely, certainly when Lamar's been in there, owned the Bengals in the Lamar era. But again, that requires Lamar staying healthy and Joe Burrow not lighting them up. So we'll see. I don't know. The Browns are like the hardest, I think, of our divisional opponents to predict this season, because there's a path, I think, where the Browns are really good. They went 11-6, right, with Joe Flacco winning the weirdest comeback player of the year award ever. If Watson's even like half good, they could be really good. So that's certainly.
But they were, Jace, they were better. They had Watson for like half the season, and then they were better with Flacco. They're almost like regressing back to their $230 million guaranteed quarterback this season. I have no idea if he's going to be any good.
And we talked about this because when they brought in Tyler Huntley, they have like four quarterbacks on the roster currently too. So they remain, I think, the biggest enigma, certainly of all the AFC North teams.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. I think the strength of schedule thing doesn't matter, because obviously we never know which teams are going to be good and bad. Like, you have a certain indication, but then there's always teams that surprise you both ways. But according to that statistic, the Browns have the hardest schedule, followed up by the Ravens with the second hardest schedule in the National Football League. A lot of that has to do with playing the AFC North and the Chiefs and the Eagles. And I was going to say the Chargers, but I take that back. And the Texans. So I do think that, and Buffalo as well. So I think the overarching point, and as we get halfway through this here, you look at the teams like Washington, you look at the teams like Denver, you look at the teams like Tampa. Although I will say that Tampa game in Florida on a random Monday night reminds me of that Thursday night game against the Dolphins a few years ago, where the Ravens just didn't show up. Like, at all, and ended up losing because they just looked like crap. Like, that makes me a little bit nervous. Other than that, I mean, it's Baker Mayfield, guys. We've beaten that guy a bunch of times already. I'm not super worried. But the point here, and I credit Jace here because he was the one that said it pre-show, but I think it's something to emphasize, is this schedule, to me, looking at it now, and all this is going to change when teams surprise us and whatnot, but right now, looking at it, you can't have slip-up games. You can't lose to Washington. You can't lose to Tampa Bay. You got to at least split with every single division team and more likely go 4-2, if not 5-1 in those division games. You can't slip against the New York Giants in the Meadowlands in a random Week 15 game coming out of the bye, which is coming out of the bye. They won't. They'll be favored by 17.5 for that game. You can't lose to Vegas to Week 2. Even if you do beat the Kansas City Chiefs, you can't lose to Vegas in a disappointment game at 1 o'clock at the bank in the home opener. Like, because of the strength of this schedule, at least on paper, for me, it is so, so vital to take the teams, the little brothers on this schedule, and show them you're the boss over and over and over again. And look, I think the Ravens are good enough to do that, but we're also Ravens fans, and we've watched them play the competition for years. I don't want to see that happen in this iteration of the schedule.
Here's the only thing I have to add onto that, Antonio and Tim, and this is something I kind of mentioned to you in passing in our pre-show, but the one thing that always kind of, I don't want to say it eats at me, but I think does get lost in the strength of schedule debate, because it is hard, and this first half of the schedule, I would say, is probably harder than the second half, but there's some weirdness with the second half we'll get into in a moment. But the thing I do think always gets lost in the strength of schedule debate, it's like you look at it and you say, oh, we have the second hardest schedule. But it's like that does, I think, people forget that, like, other teams have to play the Ravens. This team went 13-4 last year. I know they had a lot of turnover, but their quarterback is still a two-time MVP who has gone 58-19 in the regular season. You know,
get him, Jace.
It's as long as Lamar is upright, this is a team that wins 10 games and goes to the playoffs. So as hard as the schedule is, and I do think it will be a slug, or a slugfest and a slog, I should say, this season. I'm still confident the team will get to the playoffs. As long as Lamar is upright and slinging it, he's proven he can do it. So, you know, the schedule certainly is hard. I think it's a lot harder than past schedules, although I'm sure we talked about looking at last season, that hard close to the schedule when we had the 49ers and we had the Dolphins, and they ended up blowing out both those teams to claim the number one seed. So I do think that, I think you said this, Tim, but it is hard to just kind of know and predict how the season will unfold. I mean, we had a record number of starting quarterbacks last season. It was like 66 starting quarterbacks in the NFL in the 2023 season. So it's all about health. These teams can change suddenly. Teams we thought are be good will stink. Teams we, except like the Chiefs. The Chiefs will obviously be good. The Bills should be good. But, you know, there are teams that we think, like the Cowboys, we think might be good. They could be horrible. The Eagles might keep taking a nosedive. Who knows? But, yeah, I think that's why, in the end, when it comes to strength of schedule, it's just so hard to predict. And I always just circle back to, yeah, well, they have to play us too, and we've proven to be pretty good historically. So that's not great for them either.
Yeah, we talk about how Jace just mentioned difficult it is to predict things. I'm going to make a prediction. First 9 games that we just have talked about so far through November 3rd, that's a 6-3 Baltimore Ravens football team. Continuing on through November is a home game against Cincinnati Thursday night, a road game the next Sunday against the Steelers, Monday night on the road against the Chargers in the Harbaugh Bowl, and then the following Sunday at home against the Eagles before the bye in Week 14. Couple of things here. Some tough games, some weird schedule days, and then a very late bye. This is the last week that the NFL will have a bye, and the Ravens have it in Week 14. I kind of love it. I kind of, at this point, with how football seasons are going, with 17-game schedules, I want the bye as late as possible. Get right in December, and this bye week is going to be basically December 8th. Perfect. Let them get restful and healthy before that final month leading up into the postseason. So I like that. I do not like green eggs and ham. No, I do not like the Thursday night Cincy,
yeah,
following Sunday at Pittsburgh, following Monday night at the Chargers. It's not a fun month there of games with just the weirdness of the schedule and the teams and the road challenges, and I'm not feeling great about that month.
And you knew that Chargers game was always going to be a primetime game. It just kind of dependent on where they put it. But I do agree. You get an extra day, but at Pittsburgh, team we have not been able to beat lately. Steelers 7 out of 8 against the Ravens makes no sense. I don't get it. The one win the Ravens have was with like Tyler Huntley and Anthony Brown playing quarterback. It just doesn't make sense. You got to beat the Steelers once this year. that's like bare minimum, I think. We'll get to it. Both of these Steelers games in annoying spots. I mean, I guess they have 10 days to prepare for the first one, so that's good, I suppose. But, Bengals on Thursday night, they did this last year, too. This was the game Burrow got hurt in, and Mark Andrews broke his ankle in half. So it was a poor game for all involved. There was no winners in that one, I don't think. Since it ended the Bengals season, basically, and I was depressed because Mark Andrews, I thought, was out for the season and essentially was. I just don't like playing the Bengals ever, especially on primetime, and I hate Thursday night games.
Well, you do got to play them twice, Chase, just so you know. We do actually have to play them twice every week.
I mean, I guess the good news is playing Denver before you play them. In theory, you should win that game, Denver at home. And you are the home team on Thursday night. That helps a little bit, I guess. I guess that's better than the alternative. But that stretch is just brutal. And, you got to beat the Steelers on 10 days rest. If you don't, and then you have turn around and have to fly across the country for a Monday night game the next week against a team that, I don't think the Chargers are going to be great, but if they have Justin Herbert and Harb, they're going to be annoying. They're going to run the ball 40,000 times, as we've talked about all offseason. So, I don't know. Yeah, that'll be some real existential dread kind of heading around the Thanksgiving holidays if they drop that Steelers game in particular, I think.
Yeah, I mean, just it feels like going through the schedule this way and kind of the quarters that we're doing, and which a lot of NFL head coaches now do, it's like pretty tough. Okay, kind of take a break, relax a little bit, still kind of tough, really tough again, and then tough to end the season. Like, I know you mentioned it a little bit, but coming out of that Chargers game, you got the Eagles in week 13 before that bye week. I agree with Antonio completely. I think the bye as late as possible is great. Especially when guys are banged up, gives them a little bit of basically gives them a break before what potentially could be the start of their playoffs in week 15 if things fall in a pretty bad way where they're going to need to win out or, win a bunch of games in a row to try even make it to roll into the postseason. Again, Ravens wild card, we're making the Super Bowl. Ravens one seed, we're not making the Super Bowl. I'm hammering that from now on in my life. If they're the one seed, I'm not betting on them or I'm not picking them to win the Super Bowl. It's never happening ever again. The Cincy-Pittsburgh back-to-back stuff is super annoying. I will say it'll kind of be nice. We talked about, was it last year or 2 years ago, or maybe it's the past couple years, one, playing Cincy on week 18. That's not happening, and that happened like 8 years in a row, it felt like, although this year it is Cleveland, which is still relatively annoying. But it has to be a division opponent, so that's probably the least worst outcome, the best outcome. That's the way to say that, Tim. I do like getting rid of Cincinnati by week 10. Now, again, this could all vary. If Cincy's really hot to start the year and then falls off, you'd rather play him, or Joe Burrow gets hurt or whatever, you'd rather play him later in the year. But having them off our plates by week 10, I think, is great. Not seeing Pittsburgh until week 11 sucks. That is the alternate to that. Having to play them in two crucial games late in the year is not great. But I don't know. The 10 days to go to Pittsburgh, I think, is nice. I don't love prime time, like Jay said. I don't want to just rehash everything he said. And then I'm kind of glad the Chargers game is later. Like I'm happy about the Chiefs game being out of the way. I'm kind of glad that the Chargers game is a bit later because it might at that point be as a lost season. We have Harbaugh for like 5 years. We'll figure this out down the line. They have Tim Horsey and Jace Evans catching the ball at receiver for them at this point. Like, they don't have anybody. They're basically quote unquote whispering ears in the NFL tanking. They're kind of just tanking for the rest of the season, and they're going to move on, get some more pieces in the draft. Probably some more offensive linemen, maybe a center, but with the 5th overall pick, because Harbaugh loves those big guys. So, you know,
tip of the spear.
Yeah, that, exactly. I could, all weapons, Jace, by the way, they're all weapons. Don't you forget that. I could totally see that being LA. And that's a nice, you know, a nice easier quote unquote Monday night game where the only thing they have to plug is that their brothers playing each other. And we hear that 700 times. So yeah, a long way of saying this schedule just sucks. It's really hard. It's just a really hard schedule. And, you kind of hope that things fall your way, but I don't know. I'm a little bit worried about it. I will say that.
Well, Tim, if I can just add one thing to the Harbaugh, this is like the one rare thing where they'll show and it won't be painful, like Ravens memories, because we've won both of the previous Harbaughs in 2011 and in the Super Bowl.
That's
so
true.
I'll take Super Bowl highlights. Why not in that primetime game?
Show me Jacoby Jones. Just take it into the house. I'm cool.
The only other thing I have to add about this stretch, which is kind of weird, is that the Eagles are one of their preseason opponents, and they also play them in the regular season. And the NFL does this sometimes, and you know, you're not showing much in the regular season, or certainly in the preseason. But I still hate when they do this. I feel like there's enough teams that you can schedule a team you're not playing in the regular season. But I guess as we go to 17 and eventually 18 games, this will be a thing that increasingly happens probably with preseason dates. I know it's happened before with the Ravens, but it's still weird to me that it happens that you're like, here's a preseason game, and also here's a game that counts that you're playing like way later in the year. I don't like it. It's weird.
Jace, just talking about the preseason just reminded me of the Washington preseason game last year that they celebrated a preseason win, and then they're just on the Ravens schedule this year. That alone guarantees me that Harbaugh is going to win this game by double digits. He has not forgotten that. Yeah. I don't care that it's you know, new quarterback, new system over there.
The kicker,
he will let the team know.
The kicker flashing an L, and then the team going 4-13. That's a tough scene.
Yikes. All right. After the bye, the last four games for the Ravens. I wanted to hate this schedule, guys. I wanted to hate this upcoming season. I wanted to take all the unders for this team. Spoiler alert, I'm kind of into... The schedule was going to be hard, right? They had to play the first place teams. That was how that was going to play out. I kind of like the entirety of the schedule. It is soft. You have a struggle in the first month, of course. It gets soft in October. You have that weird November that's unclear. There's a lot of question marks about those teams that we are playing in November, where right now they look like tough games. Who knows what they're going to be by the time we get to them. And then December looks extremely winnable to me. Off the bye, you are at the New York Giants. We're not going to talk about the last time they played at the New York Giants. The Sunday after that, they're at home against the Steelers. Then 4 days later, they play Wednesday at the Houston Texans. It's Christmas Day. It's 4:30 p.m. It's on Netflix. Do with that what you will when I stop here. But and then the final game of the season at home against the Cleveland Browns. And I promise I'm not saying this because I'm just am sure that the Ravens are going to once again have locked up the number one seed and everything. It's a free game. But the week 18 games can often be irrelevant just based on the seeding. There's just nowhere to go at that point. You're locked into the wild card, so the game doesn't matter. You're locked into the division, and you can't really move up to the second seed or the third seed or any of those things. I kind of like having Cleveland in that last game. Put the division game there, as Tim mentioned. That's, you know, it has to be in that week 18. The variables on that game are so far and wide that I'm okay with it. I just kind of love this last four. And, of course, tying into Lamar Jackson, if he's healthy, just wins games in December at a ridiculous clip. I don't have the number in front of me, but it somehow his winning percentage even goes up further when you're focusing on December football games. So I like it. I like how the schedule closes with the late bye and then four extremely winnable games. The Houston one, obviously, that's the kind of the test there. But a pretty comfortable, I would think, you would hope, final month of the season.
Lamar Jackson 17-3 in December, Antonio. That's pretty good.
It's pretty good.
So I agree with you. The teams aren't hard. What's weird is just the timing of all this. So it's 3 games in 10 days from the 15th to the 25th. Now that is a lot. That is a lot of games in a short time, but it is coming off their bye. So that's the benefit of the late bye. And we should say, like, the Saturday and Sunday games, or the Saturday, Wednesday, the week 16 to week 17 going into Christmas, all those teams have the same schedule. That's how they're designing it. So, like, the Steelers, I believe they play the Chiefs on Christmas, and they also play, well, they play us on that Saturday, then they play the Chiefs on Christmas. The Texans play the Chiefs on that Saturday and then play us on Christmas. So it's all kind of the same in terms of disadvantage, I guess you'd say, for those teams. So in that sense, it's fair, I guess, if everyone's in sort of the same boat. And then having 11 days to prepare for your season finale is fascinating. And the fact that it's at home, that's basically like a mini bye. Now, you get into a whole other rest versus rust conversation, but I do think at the end of the season, and why I like the bye where it is I think you want to, A, be playing as little games as possible in the cold, just because it's hard on people's bodies, and I think we could say, Lamar, it's better when it's warm, certainly. So I think from that sense, I like the late bye and having that extra time to prepare for your season finale game, if it is a huge game, and, you know, there's a world where this game will decide the AFC North if the Browns are good, so it could easily be a primetime game. It's not the worst thing to have 11 days to prepare for that. I feel like in the moment, it's going to be very weird to go from December 25th to January 5th without a single game. I feel like I've never seen a stretch where you're not having an actual bye of that many days off, but... You know, this is the new NFL, too. You know, I think the Wednesday game's a little ridiculous. They literally claimed last year they wouldn't do it, and then, oh, here's two games on Christmas that are being brought to you streaming on Netflix. It's just what the NFL is doing. We'll get into various other quirks of the NFL schedule broadly in a few, because we're not the only team that has a weird schedule, I'll say. I think in terms of the teams you can face, it's... not too bad down the stretch. It's just that weird, like, kind of stretch we've never really seen before in those final 3 weeks in particular. Or really, yeah, just the final 4 weeks coming out of the bye. It's just the timing's so strange with all four of those games with, like, 3 in 10 days and then an 11-day break. But who knows? You know, maybe that, in a perfect world, that refreshes them, that 11-day break, and they beat the Browns, hopefully, at home. And then you go into the playoffs... however the chips fall. So I think it's fine. It's just kind of weird more than anything. Like, I don't think it's good or bad. I think it just kind of is, and it's odd. But this is the NFL we live in now, so you kind of just have to deal with it.
Yeah, I think that's the main point here. As you look at it and you're like, all right, Giants, bad. Pittsburgh, you know, that's Justin Fields by that point, so you got to feel pretty confident in that. Although, you know, who knows, it's Pittsburgh games, and as much as Lamar is great against Cincinnati, he seems to really struggle against Pittsburgh, just thinking back to it. Houston, just, you know, I don't love it at Houston. I don't love it short week. But also Houston, this is going to sound bad because they're the darling of the NFL. They still feel like a little brother team to me in terms of not like you need to dominate them but because they are good. But, like, I think the Ravens are a notch above. Like, I think Houston's right below them in terms of talent level here, so show them that, please. That being said, you know, CJ Stroud could be on a MVP like pace by week 17, so who knows. And then Cleveland, it's a toss-up. We can't say anything intelligent about them here because who knows. So it is funny, you know, we talked about that third quadrant, and I was alluding to the fourth quadrant being like, oh, it's another murderer's row, but it's really not. I think that Antonio makes the best point. It's as pretty much as good as you could get for the final stretch run, knowing who you already had to play. And so that's why, you know, I'm kind of okay with it. That being said, you know, we might do this here. We might do it a bit later when we do one of our favorite episodes, the over-under episode. I know where I'm going, and if you know who I am, you are going to know exactly where I'm going as well.
All right, let's get into the data. Let's crunch some numbers here, because the trends have come out. This required some real difficult calculations. The Ravens have 5 primetime games and a Christmas Day game, which I guess you could count as a primetime. It's not technically, you know, 8 p.m., 8 to 10 p.m. in primetime, but it's a featured game. It's a weird game, so we can call it 6 primetime games. That's a lot. We have often bemoaned the Ravens having any primetime games because we don't like it. They stress us out. The Ravens look bad on national television. But I'm here to throw a little bit of cold water on that theorem. John Harbaugh, since joining the Ravens as head coach in 2008. I'm off by maybe half a game on this, but I think I'm right. It was a little difficult to fact check this officially, but 39-17 in primetime as a head coach. It is the NFL best record for primetime since 2008, which is obviously when he became the head coach. Lamar Jackson, 16-4 as a starter in primetime games in his career. Does this stuff kind of overlap? Sure. But we should want more primetime games. We should want half the season in primetime because they have shown over, does some quick math here, 16 years that they're the best at it. Literally the best at it over 16 years with this head coach. I'm not afraid. You know, bring on the bright lights. Bring on Lamar Jackson. I don't think he wears the, does he do the visor anymore? I don't think he does, but... bring him on with the visor, with the lights glaring off the visor at night. I'm into it, and I'm not afraid. So that's the first bit of data to go off. The strength of schedule is the next one. We touched on it a little bit as we ran through it. They have the second hardest schedule based on 2023 win percentage. Jace mentioned, yeah, all those teams have to play us. I love it. Also, there is so much variance in the NFL from one season to the next. The bad teams that you played last year almost definitely have a different quarterback, and he's probably a first-round pick or, like, a good veteran. The good teams last year were probably healthy all season. That's not gonna happen again this season. That is almost a throwaway stat at this point. And then the final point that I want to bring up, and this is coming to you right from Sharp Football Analysis, Warren Sharp. I will be honest, I go back and forth with his stuff. Sometimes he makes these very loud points that are easily kind of disproven with other data points. But this is one that is interesting. The Ravens have, not by far, but a very significant difference in terms of their rest days versus the opponents that they are playing in during the season. Over the course of all 18 weeks, the Ravens have a 16-day advantage in terms of rest against their opponent. And it was like one of the biggest numbers in a very long time. I want to say that this stat is ridiculous and not useful, but I can't. Because the players complain about scheduling stuff in terms of, our bodies are not ready to play another football game. We do not like having to play games on short rest, having to not have the regular week. Our bodies are breaking down as the year goes along. They have the biggest advantage of that for the entirety of the season. I think that is going to matter. When you are going in November against a team that has had significantly less rest than you over the course of the season and has to play you on short rest and you do not, that matters when you are hitting the linemen, hitting each other over and over and over again. I'm into it. I don't know how it happened. I don't know why it happened. It kind of takes a little bit of, strength away from the NFL hates the Ravens. I will admit that a little bit, but there are some interesting numbers here. The primetime stuff, I like it because of the proven success. The difference of rest days is significant in that it's wildly higher than normal. The strength of schedule, I don't really care because these teams are going to be different than they were the year before. So I don't really, it doesn't really bother me that they have a really hard schedule. Obviously, there's some tough games in there, but it's not a real determining factor for me. So that's kind of all of this together as we went through the games. I wanted to hate it more, and I just don't. And it's helpful to me as we get into the summer when I have 3 months to stare at Ravens at Chiefs week one.
The wrestling's interesting to me, Antonio. So I saw that number kicking around, too. I saw a different tweet about it that said that 16-day difference is actually the highest any team has had since the last divisional realignment in 2002. So it's like historic number of rests. But then I also think about, like, the reason they have this extra rest is because they're playing the season opener, they play another TNF game, and they're playing on Wednesday, which obviously, well, aside from the opener, creates all short weeks on the other end, and that's how you end up playing 3 days or 3 games in 10 days after your bye. But like I said, I like that when the bye is. So I do think
but
it matters.
But Jace, the first one isn't short rest, right? So that's just a net advantage. Yeah. Everybody's right the same bat. That day. And then you get 10 days. And then the Wednesday game you mentioned earlier, they dovetailed the schedules so that it was fair. So you just have the long week after the Christmas game. The other leading up to it, you're the same as your opponent. So that it's a nice kind of end result.
Yeah, I think they'll like it, certainly. And this kind of touches on just with the bye placement. I assume the Ravens have some input on putting the bye that late. I don't totally know how much teams have say in that, but I noticed that weeks 12 and 14 are the 2 weeks that have the most teams on bye with 6 each, and it's week 14, as you mentioned, and I believe, Antonio, is the last week any teams have byes. So the Ravens taking their bye as late as possible, they get that extra 11 days leading into the season finale. It does provide a lot of rest, and I think is bodes well for a team that has aspirations of playing deep in the playoffs to get a lot of rest in December, after you have the little gauntlet there of just playing a lot. But then you kind of have a fresh reset. And, I mean, if you somehow manage to get a bye again, I don't know that I think they'll do that. But then you have a whole other, like, week and a half off again. So I do think it'll help. And I do think, like, in a marathon of a season in which the NFL is becoming, with clearly an 18th game on the way based on how Roger Goodell has been talking lately, that just having this extra built-in time off, I do think is a benefit on the whole. I'm sure in the moment I'll be like, oh my God, we have to play the Bengals on Thursday after we just like barely beat the Broncos on a Sunday or whatever. But big picture, holistically, I do think it probably is a good thing.
You both are exactly correct. Antonio laid it out so eloquently there, and he's right. Especially the rest stuff I think is important. I hate primetime games. I hate them. I hate them. I hate all of them. The Ravens are good. They're going to get primetime games. I know it. I hate it. I don't want any of them. Sunday at 1, please. I'll wake up at 6 a.m. and make all the food. Sunday at 1, please. I just want Sunday at 1. That's all I want.
Spiro Ditas on the call.
Yes, that's fine. Yeah, Spiro Ditas and whoever the hell. As long as it's not... Never mind. He's passed away. As long as it's not some other people as well. I think we're
Jim?
Okay. Yeah. Oh, well, he's... He's not great, but he's fine. But he's in primetime spots. I don't know, Jim, so I don't know if I want him either. Yeah, I was thinking Dan Dierdorf and Dan Fouts. I don't want either of them on calls, but they're, I don't think they're any on calls any longer, at least one of them, obviously. So, look, I think you guys are bang on. And to reinforce Antonio's point again, this schedule was going to look some degree of bad because of who you have to play. And that's what you get when you're a good team. That's why the NFL has parity, and this is part of the reason, is because they make the best teams face each other every year. But the way it laid out, it's hard to be upset about it. I go to bed early. I didn't want 5 games where I have to stay up to at least 11:30 at night. That's not good for me. It's not good for my job. It's not good for my health. It's not good for anything. But, you know, I can't complain too much when the Ravens are as good as they are.
Also, just for record keeping, Dan Dierdorf still alive. He is still alive.
Okay. Well,
he just is not on calls anymore.
I tried to kill off Dan Dierdorf. My apologies. Sorry about that. I swore that he had passed away. So, apologies. I hope you're doing well, Dan. I'm just glad I don't have to hear you on football games.
All right. So that's the Ravens schedule. We don't have to do the NFL too much, but just I'm curious some takes that you guys have from looking at the whole schedule release. I have a couple that I want to fire off here real fast. The Jets. Come on now. Will they never learn? The Jets can't have nice things. They don't get nice things. They haven't had nice things in like 50 years. They sign Aaron Rodgers. He lasts three plays. They're bad. Their coach is bad. Their quarterback play is bad. They're on, like, all these primetime games, and they were painful to watch. Aaron Rodgers loses his mind even more so than he already had. He's healthy, I guess. He's now 41, coming off of an Achilles tear. I have no faith that he is going to last a 17-game season, coming off that injury already at his age, when he was basically already declining in his last year with the Packers. So what did they give him? Six more primetime games. They have six primetime games and a London game. And I look forward to, who is their back? Tyrod Taylor is their backup quarterback, right? I look forward to watching Tyrod Taylor host the Buffalo Bills on Monday night in October. And it's going to be a bad product. And they could have just given him three primetime games and just kind of lived with the results. No, it's six primetime games and a London game. And they're not going to be good, again, because I do not have faith in that team. I do not have faith in that quarterback, given age, injury, and whatever medicinal things he is doing in the offseason. Some fun games. Chiefs at the Niners. That'll be fun. Super Bowl rematch. Chiefs at the Bills. Obviously, they have battled year in, year out. Commanders at Bears. Week 8. You're probably looking at the number one draft pick against the number two draft pick. That should be fun. And then Bears at Packers, week 18. I don't want to go too far with the Bears on being immediately a playoff contender, but could be a very significant week 18 game with the Packers maybe trying to win the division, the Bears maybe trying to sneak into a wild card spot if they have just the complete turnaround with, you know, the guy at quarterback this year and the weapons that they have. So it's always fun. There's some great games in the schedule. The Jet stuff, come on, man. Like, that's kind of how I feel about that. But, yeah, what else do you guys have in terms of some NFL points?
The Jets thing I just don't understand at all, Antonio. It's like, I get why they want the Jets to be good, because the NFL for basically nearly close to 15 years now, at least well over a dozen, has been chugging along with the New York teams doing absolutely nothing, pretty much. The Giants have been awful. The Jets have been even worse. Jets haven't made the playoffs since 2010. Giants have two playoff appearances since they won the Super Bowl in 2011. And I guess the Jets will be better than the Giants, but you mentioned that six primetime games. You know the only teams that also have six primetime games? The NFC champion San Francisco 49ers, one of the biggest fan bases in the NFL, and the Dallas Cowboys, the literal most popular team in the NFL. Those are the two teams that share six primetime games with the Jets. And their explanation from the NFL brass of, like, why this is happening is just, like, just so unsatisfactory. This is Mike North, who is the NFL's vice president of broadcast planning, told reporters, when asked about it, he said, "It's an awful lot of primetime games early in the season, but obviously I feel like the Jets kind of owe us one." And he later said he basically, let's hope Rodgers, quote, stays healthy, and hopefully the Jets are relevant. it's just like, what? I mean, I do think there's a path for the Jets being good. And like he mentioned in some of his comments where broadcast partners were interested in Aaron Rodgers' return as a key early season storyline that people care about. And I guess I get that. Like, Rodgers, outside of maybe Mahomes, probably is the face of the NFL. He's the oldest player in the league. He's a four-time MVP. He's probably, outside of Mahomes again, the most accomplished player in the NFL. But what if this does go bad again? And then we're just watching these sad Jets games with the Meadowlands crowd just booing the Jets. I just don't get it. It's mind-boggling to me. But you'll see them. Maybe they'll end up getting some flex. But the other team you will see a lot of, I guess, just schedule takeaways. The Chiefs have 8 standalone games. And I know they're the two-time defending champs. They have the possible two most popular players in the NFL in Mahomes and Travis Kelce. But there are 8 standalone games, and for the first time since like the 1920s, they're set to play on be the first team since the 20s to play a game on all but one day of the week. They play every day but Tuesday this season because they are playing a Black Friday game. They are playing on Wednesday with us. They have TNF games and so obviously Sunday games, and they play a Saturday game at some point. So the only day of the week the Chiefs don't play is Tuesday. This is a central time zone team that it plays only 3 games at 1 p.m. on a Sunday all season. And those games are against the Broncos, the Panthers, and the Browns. So you're not going to escape the Chiefs. They are going to be, if they are not in prime time, they are going to be 425 games that like 3/4 of the country, if not more, see. And it's, I hate it. You're not going to, you know, as much as I said, I want to get the Chiefs, personally play the Chiefs and get them out of the way. You're not going to escape the Chiefs this entire NFL season. They're going for the NFL's first three-peat in a long, long time. I mean, we haven't even had back-to-back champs since the Brady Pats in the early 2000s. So they're just going to be front and center, and that sucks. And then I guess I just want to point out a few other primetime things that jumped out to me. Panthers, they don't play on primetime. That's not surprising when you go 2-15, but they're the only team that doesn't have a primetime game this season, even though they do play, I believe, in Germany this season. We're sending them overseas for some reason. And then two teams or three teams, one of them got a little more primetime love last year. But the first one, the Lions, 5 primetime games, in 2024. And I dare I say the Lions are fast becoming America's team. I think they're certainly on the short list, and their 5 primetime games match them with all the usual suspects, including us, in terms of primetime. But then the other two that were kind of not weird to me, the Texans make sense. The Texans didn't have a scheduled primetime game last year. Now they have 4 and 2 more standalone games this season. But the only thing, and this is Jets-wise, Jets-adjacent, that kind of jumped out to me, if I just don't get it. The Falcons were shut out of primetime last year, but have 4 primetime games this year, including 3 in the first 5 weeks. And I guess that means the NFL just thinks people are that interested in Kirk Cousins being on the Falcons. But I don't understand this. I don't know if you all have any insight. You could lend me just, into who...
Jace, the juice of Penix on the side, like the camera panning between the two quarterbacks. Yeah. That's what the people want. That's what they want
to
give
them. Well, especially if Kirk's like not 100% to start the season, and it's just like we have like a week 2 Penix primetime game. Like, there's just like... I don't know. I guess... I know Arthur Blank has a good bit of pull in NFL circles historically. And I don't know if he was just mad they got shut out of primetime last year and made his voice heard in the room, but that just seems like way too much Falcons for me in primetime, especially early in the season. Like, I get it, they're going to be favored to win the NFC South, but I don't think they're that good, and I don't think Kirk Cousins is that interesting. And so, aside from the Jets, they're the one that I think was left scratching my head about, why are we seeing the Falcons in primetime this much? Like, pretty much everyone else I can just, like I said, like, I get why the Texans have so many primetime games, like, I understand everyone else makes sense, the number of primetime games they got, but the Falcons really just sort of, for a team that had none last year to get 4 this year, I'm like, what's happening here?
They weren't that good last year. Did they get way better this year? We're not really sure. We don't really know what they're doing. Let's give them a bunch of primetime. It is odd, Jace. I want to say that this is a normal like push and pull of having all the puzzle pieces fit together, but it isn't that, because I know that the NFL does all this stuff very consciously to get things that they want, situations that they want. And we have some oddities. I was going to say a final fun thing is Packers. I was going to say Packers at Eagles. Packers versus the Eagles week 1 in Brazil. That's fun. And then I saw it's on Peacock, so I will not be watching that football game. So you guys, NFL can go to hell.
And that's did you say that's a Friday night game too? Like that?
It is Friday night. I will be out Friday night because I'm not getting Peacock to watch one football game. So that's deal with it, NFL. One subscriber lost. That will forever be a frustrating thing for me. But cool that they're having a game in a new continent, much less new country. So that should be fun for some people. All right. Anything else, guys, from the schedule from the Ravens for late May? As we Memorial Day plans. Anything else before we close up?
Oh, we're getting crabs next weekend.
There we go.
It's prime time over here. I had a crab cake yesterday. I went to an O's game. It's all happening.
All right. Well, then that will do it for us. It gets quiet, peacefully. In NFL world when we get into June. So we are definitely taking 2 weeks off, dare I say 3 weeks off, who knows, but we will let you guys know as that news comes in. But obviously if there's any big Raven stuff, we will be here to break it down with you. But for now, for Tim Horsey and Jace Evans, I am Antonio Barbera. Thank you for listening to us and checking in with us on Pod Like a Raven. We will see you when we see.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big money on new windows now at Menards. Update your home with vinyl windows from Jeld-Wen. They're durable, energy efficient, and are low maintenance. Menards carries over 100 different size and style options in stock, ready to take home today. Save big on Jeld-Wen windows in store or view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more window deals happening this week now at Menards.
Save big.